Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is May 5th, 2022. I'm Louise Devery-Bjorkman. I'm joined on the panel this morning by Chief Judge Siegel and Judge Hooten. The next matter on our calendar for argument is the case of Rachel Grage or Garages versus WeCare Daycare and the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I know that you are both familiar with our procedures. I will just remind you that you will each have 15 minutes to make your argument. Counsel for relator, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument. And I would just remind you and anyone else who may be observing this argument that no recordings are permitted. So with that, Ms. Morgos, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Nicole Morgos of Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services representing appellant Rachel Grages. The employer violated the law, which gave Ms. Grages good reason to quit caused by her employer. The law requires a meal break where the employee is completely relieved of duties, and the record is clear that Ms. Grages did not get such a break.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you right there because what do you base that argument on? All the statute says is sufficient time to eat a meal. And so it doesn't seem like Ms. Grages is contending that she wasn't given time to eat. And isn't this break without duties, isn't that just about whether you get paid or not? What can you point us to support your argument that it means you have to provide an unpaid, responsibility-free lunch break?
Your Honor, so the sufficient meal break portion is only, you know, part of the analysis. Looking at Rule 5200.0120, which supplements or should be read also with the sufficient meal break portion of it, it simply states the employee must be completely relieved from duty for the purpose of eating regular meals. 30 minutes or more is ordinarily long enough. And looking at Frank versus Golden Plump Poultry, the federal court in that matter really went into the analysis of that rule. And it's not just about whether the employee gets paid or not, because you're right, Ms. Grages isn't suggesting that, you know, she was not paid or improperly paid, but the record is clear, as the ULJ found, that the employer did not schedule breaks for employees and that the employees were expected to eat with the children, meaning they were expected to eat while they were working. But in my reading of the rule and our argument is that it's clear that the employee must be completely relieved from duty for the purpose of eating regular meals. And it's clear that that was not the case here.
But then the evidence in the record also show, I mean, the manager, the supervisor said, well, people can take that break. They just have to let me know. So does that solve that issue or?
No, Your Honor. There's nothing in the law that requires that the employee have to ask for this meal break that they should be given. The employer is required to provide it. And looking at the other testimony from the director, it's clear that even if Ms. Grages had asked for a break that day and had wanted one, they did not have sufficient staffing for her to be able to take one, which is why the food had to be brought in for her to grab and then go sit and eat with the children.
Well, then I've got one other question for you, and then I'll let you get on with your argument and allow my panel members to ask any questions they have. So when we're determining whether your client had good cause to quit attributable to the employer, what's the standard there? Is it that it's the meal break was the determinative factor? A factor is enough? Because it also seems like there's the testimony is that she had kind of had it with the conduct of her manager, and that's why that was the straw that broke the camel's back, that she was rude to her, that she thought she was an abusive manager. She yelled. It was unfair that she wasn't allowed to bring in food. So what standard are we to apply?
So whether an employee had a good reason to quit caused by the employer is a question of law that this court can review de novo. You're right, Your Honor. The testimony that the judge found credible from Ms. Gragas was that, you know, this essentially was, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. Ms. Gragas had worked there for about 8 years and had been, you know, having to deal with this sort, this abusive behavior for all of these years. And although employees don't always know what their legal rights are and what they're you know, what an employer is required to do for them, this meal break issue is a nexus and related to that sort of final dispute that happened. Since if she would have been given a proper meal break, she would have had time to, you know, sit down and eat the meal and not had to hear the director argue in front of the kids about, you know, her bringing in food again.
So so analogizing this to the employment discrimination laws, that the meal break, if we accept your interpretation of the rules and the statute, does that need to be the determinative factor? Or just if it's, yeah, and this also happened and that got her mad, is that enough to constitute good cause to quit?
Well, an employee can have more than one reason for quitting. And I will say
I understand that, but is there any case law or anything you can point to tell us how we weigh the different reasons in figuring out, you know, is it a determinative factor or just if it's a factor, one of 25 reasons why somebody quit? And if it's one of 25, that's good enough.
Well, so first, I will say the Kanky brothers and the Hawthorne cases both discuss that if an employer violates the law, it's per se good cause. So even if we're just looking at this meal break situation that we've been talking about, that's enough for Ms. Gragas to have good cause to quit her employment. But additionally,
but it has to be the thing I'm struggling with, counsel, and I hate to interrupt you, is not so much what the law might be, and I agree with you as to what the Hawthorne case says, but here we have a consistent position by your client throughout this case that the reason she quit is because of the rude, condescending conduct and treatment she received from her boss. That this meal might have been part of the context of the, you know, in which the rude behavior took place. But even if I agree with you that the violation of the law would be good cause, there has to be a connection between the good cause and the reason this particular employee quit, doesn't there?
Well, looking at her, you know, her quitting due to the behavior of the director, I would say that alone is also good cause for her quitting. Like I mentioned earlier, she had worked there for 8 years, and this is an objective standard where the good cause, you have to look at the analysis that is used is looking at the specific facts of each case. And also if we kind of turn this around and think about this in the employment misconduct context, when an employee is fired for misconduct, that's also an objective standard. And if an employee were acting in the way that the judge found credible that the director was acting in this case, there would be no question that it would be employment misconduct and the employee would not be eligible for benefits. So why is it not good enough for Ms. Gragas to quit when she's having to experience the sort of behavior from the director?
I want to follow up on a question that Judge Portman just asked you. In this case, the ULJ actually made a finding of fact that she quit because of the personality conflict with her boss, and that and that she was scolded for ordering lunch from an outside source. There's nothing in that finding that indicates that she quit because of some violation of her right to a lunch break or any other issue. What is our standard of review? Isn't this fact unless it's clearly erroneous binding here?
So it would be, clearly erroneous, or if it's unsupported by substantial evidence in view of the hearing record as submitted. And again, going back to the meal break issue, there is no substantial evidence that she got the break that was required under the law. Even if she didn't know she was required to get it, it's clear that she did not get what the employer was required to give her.
Right. But the finding is, this is the reason she gave and the reason the evidence supports that she quit, was this personality conflict and this fight over ordering food out. So I think aren't we bound by that unless there's no evidence in the record or it's clearly erroneous?
No, Your Honor. Looking, I would disagree. I would say that whether she had good cause to quit, again, is a question of law that's reviewed de novo. And even if we're going to ignore the meal break issue and just look at the issue of the behavior that she, testified that she had to endure, the judge erred and got it wrong, finding that there was not good reason to quit, because there isn't some sort of subjective standard. There's an objective standard where we have to look at the specific facts of each case, and looking at the specific facts, even just looking at that issue, she had good reason to quit. And when coupling that with the fact that she did not get the required meal break under the law, she had good reason to quit caused by the employer and should be eligible for unemployment benefits.
What was it specifically about Ms. Brunn's conduct vis-a-vis your client that would cause a reasonable employee to quit and become unemployed? Rather than stay in that particular work situation?
So I think it's important to mention that Ms. Gragas had worked there for almost 8 years. This wasn't someone who worked there for a month or two and decided that she couldn't take it anymore. Ms. Gragas was not super sensitive. She had worked there for a really long time and had to endure, someone who was yelling, who was throwing things. And this was happening around the children who they were supposed to be, who she was supposed to be providing care for, which her job was. So this is not, again, this is not someone who's super sensitive. This is someone who had to endure it for a number of years before she decided that, that she shouldn't have to essentially take that anymore. And furthermore, the ULJ found her testimony about those working conditions to be credible. And she reported these working conditions to the director, who testified that she told Ms. Gragas that she is the boss. And the ULJ further found that these issues were happening and that they were not corrected, they were not resolved. So not only had she reported the adverse working condition as she was, required to do under the statute, but the judge also found that the employer wasn't going to fix it. So if the employer wasn't going to fix it, then why does she have to continually endure that when she's already been enduring it for 7 or 8 years?
So a question: what's your best case for saying that the manager's conduct was such that it created good cause?
So, I guess I would reiterate that the court does need to look at the specific facts of the case when doing this good cause analysis. But looking at the Perazzo case as well, that case did talk about the employee or the applicant for benefits in that case having an unworkable or a difficult relationship with the immediate supervisor, and in that case they did find that the applicant they reversed the decision and found the applicant did have good cause to quit the employment and was therefore eligible for benefits. But there are, you know, a lot. I know that respondents counsel, you know, cited other cases where good cause was, you know, not determined. But again, we have to look at the specific facts of each case when doing this analysis.
In this case, and this is the fight that led to her resigning. I mean, as I understand, the supervisor indicated that the reason that she wanted them to eat with the children and this eat the same food, and if they did go out, I think she was upset that they weren't sharing the outside food with other staff members. I mean, wasn't that within the realm of the supervisor's duties? I mean, is that so unreasonable for a supervisor to have some criteria for what type of foods are eaten at lunch?
So it's okay to have some, and I see I'm out of time, but can I answer the question?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I think it's fine to have some sort of guideline or suggestion that the employees eat the same food as the children, but the testimony is clear that it wasn't some procedure or, you know, some bright line rule that the employees had to eat the same food as the children. But again, going back to looking at the meal break issue, she wasn't given the you know, 30 minute break that she was required to, that the employer was required to give her. So whether or not they wanted someone to eat the same food as the children, I don't think that's what we need. That's not what the focus is here. The focus is she had per se good cause because she did not get that meal break, in addition to having to endure the behavior from the director.
But is there anything in this record that she complained on this date when she left that she was leaving because she didn't get a 30-minute break?
Well, I will say that the testimony in the record does note that she testified that her and other employees had complained in the past about not getting breaks, but that nothing had been done about it. So again, why continue to complain about things when the judge found that things weren't being corrected?
All right. Thank you, Colin.
Thank you.
You will have time for rebuttal. Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Maneza Humayu, and I represent Respondent Deed, the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. Your Honors, we're asking you to affirm the ULJ's final decision because her findings of fact are supported by substantial evidence and her legal conclusions are consistent with the statute and case law. There are two main points that I would like to address today. The first is this issue of the ULJ's reversal of her decision on the meal break issue. And the second issue that I would like to address is whether Ms. Gregus's true reason for quitting, the behavior of the executive director, amounts to a good reason caused by the employer for quitting. Regarding that first issue, the ULJ did reverse herself without ordering an additional hearing. And Deed's position is that she did not have to, under the statute, order a new hearing in this case. The ULJ clearly stated in her final decision that she did not believe the new evidence sent in by the employer would change the outcome or would show that likely false evidence submitted at the hearing affected the outcome of the case. And that is consistent when you review the exhibits, the transcript of the hearing, and the new evidence. It's clear that there was no factual dispute between the parties about whether this lunch break issue was part of the reason why Ms. Gregus quit. Ms. Gregus has never asserted that she quit because she was denied enough time to eat or because she did not have a scheduled unpaid lunch break. I have combed through the record and I have not found any place in the record where Ms. Gregus made that assertion. And I would be happy to be corrected if counsel can point me to anywhere in the record where Ms. Gregus asserts that she quit because she did not have enough time to eat or that she quit because she did not have a scheduled lunch break. And again, she worked there for 8 years. The lunch practice was consistent throughout those 8 years. She didn't quit because of this lunch break issue. So when the employer sends in this new evidence, employee statement saying we always had enough time to eat, that information really was not necessary to resolve any conflict in evidence because there was no dispute between the parties that there was no scheduled separate lunch break that would be an unpaid period of time. The parties agreed that Ms. Gregus would sit down with other staff and the children and eat in the lunchroom every day.
Good question, Ms. Humayun. I'm confused by the ULJ's order because the ULJ, you know, references what you just did, and that is the new information that WeCare employees submitted about meal breaks and that they in fact did get them. But the ULJ's decision didn't turn on that point, but the ULJ says at the end of the order, the findings of fact and reasons for decision are amended to correct the law. In what way did the ULJ's order on reconsideration correct the law? I'm confused by that.
My understanding of the ULJ's memo that you just referred to, Judge Bjorkman, is that she appears to have considered the administrative rules, specifically subpart 5200.0120, which talks about when a meal period must be paid time, hours worked. It appears that she did not consider that in her initial decision. In her initial decision, she was relying only on the statute, Minnesota statutes 177.253 or 254. In her second decision, the final decision, she takes into account the rules, which make clear that there is no legal requirement for an employer to provide a separate unpaid meal break during the workday, as long as there's sufficient time given to the employee to eat. So it appears that that consideration changed her mind about whether this employer violated the law. And she also appears to have removed the finding that Ms. Gregus was not given sufficient time to eat. She made that finding in the initial decision, but as we made clear in the brief and explained from a review of the record, there is no factual support, no evidentiary support for that initial finding. So she removed that finding. And again, Ms. Gregus conceded in her brief on page 24 of their principal brief that this meal break issue really wasn't the reason for quitting anyway. And as far as the legal requirement goes, I would just like to briefly address counsel's argument that there is a legal requirement for the employer to provide a meal break of a certain duration during which the employee is completely relieved of duties. We disagree with counsel on that respectfully. If we look at Minnesota Administrative Rule 5200.0060 that addresses meal allowances, that rule makes even more clear that there is no requirement that the employee be completely relieved of duties for purposes of eating a meal or that there be a 30-minute lunch break. That subpart, again, 5200.0060 says meal periods of less than 20 minutes may not be deducted from hours worked, nor may meal periods be deducted where the employee is not entirely free from work responsibility. So again, that rule essentially or necessarily contemplates that there may be a meal period in which the employee is not fully relieved of duties. What the significance of that is whether that time is counted as hours worked or not, whether that time is paid or not. The second issue that I wanted to address was the true reason for Ms. Gregus's quit, which is the behavior of the executive director, who is her boss. The ULJ ruled in her final decision that although Ms. Gregus's testimony was believed about how the executive director behaved, the behavior of the executive director would not compel an average reasonable person to quit and become unemployed.
But and we, so could we, though, you know, reading Perrazzo, could we say, you know, legally this is seems equivalent to us, so we're reversing? I mean, are we allowed to do that? Or if there's, what is our standard there?
The legal standard, Your Honors, is conditions have to be so adverse that an average reasonable person would be compelled to quit and become unemployed. And that's significant because that is distinguished from when conditions are so bad that an employee would start to look for another job versus when they would quit without having another job lined up. And Perazzo is distinguishable because in that case, there was an increase in the employee's workload without an increase in their salary. And the court was careful to note that it was the, quote, combined pressures of that stressful relationship with the supervisor and the increased workload without an increase in pay that amounted to a good reason caused by the employer for quitting.
Why doesn't, Relator's lawyer suggested, why doesn't the fact that this is an 8-year employee, that this conduct has gone on for a long time and involves, you know, disparaging language and imposition of restrictions on your ability to get lunches and doing all of these things in front of the children. And, you know, Relator is a, you know, a dedicated childcare preschool teacher. I mean, why don't those things in combination rise to the level that we can decide as a matter of law is something that would compel an average reasonable employer to say, I'm done, even if I don't have another job to go to?
Your Honor, the long tenure, the 8-year employment, I think cuts both ways. So in cases where this court has found that an employee quit because of intolerable harassment from coworkers, there seems to be a pattern that those employments were short-lived, maybe a few months. And I can cite to specific cases where the court has found that the behavior of others was so intolerable that it amounted to a good reason caused by the employer for quitting. In this case, Ms. Gregus and Ms. Burns worked together for 8 years, and Ms. Gregus testified that there were, quote, altercations between them on various occasions. And she talked about two in particular, one that happened on her final day of employment and another one that happened in November. And I don't believe, Your Honor, that there was any allegation that Ms. Burns used disparaging language toward Ms. Gregus. I believe the conduct that Ms. Gregus alleged was that Ms. Burns would raise her voice and that she would throw small objects on the desk or on a counter. So she would throw a pen or she would throw papers. Now, I completely agree that an employee who is witnessing the top person in the organization, the executive director, behaving in this way, expressing their frustration in visible ways and being visibly upset, that would not be pleasant to deal with. And it would probably make a reasonable employee think, oh, wow, she's having a bad day today. I probably should stay away and maybe not bring up any sensitive subjects today. Any important conversation should be held off for another day. But I don't believe an average reasonable employee would think, I would be better off quitting this job and being unemployed and without an income than staying here one more day. I think that's the key distinction. There's no threat to Ms. Gregus' safety here. There's no allegation that Ms. Brentz ever threw anything in her direction or that there was any physical aggression toward Ms. Gregus. There's no allegation of any name calling. There's no allegation that Ms. Burns swore at Ms. Gregus. So again, those are all things that were key factors in cases where this court has found good reason caused by the employer for quitting, and those don't exist here. In several unpublished cases, this court has considered facts that are more similar to this case, where the boss is just cranky or critical or raises their voice when speaking to employees, and those have generally not been found to meet the very high standard of a good reason caused by the employer for quitting.
And it's an objective standard, is that correct?
It is an objective standard, Your Honor. So in this case, again, Ms. Gregus managed to work with Ms. Bruns for 8 years, and she may have finally reached a point where she decided for herself that it wasn't worth it to stay in this employment. But I don't think, if you look at what happened on February 18th, I don't think an average reasonable person following that argument would have chosen to become unemployed. What happens is Ms. Gregus walks into the kitchen, Ms. Bruns asks her who ordered food, and she says, I did, and Isabella did. And Ms. Bruns says, oh, did you ask anybody else? And Ms. Griggs says, no, we didn't have time. Then Ms. Brent says, well, I did ask you to not order out so much. At that point, Ms. Griggs leaves her food on the counter, storms out of the kitchen. Ms. Brent follows her, and then they argue back and forth. That also is key because Ms. Griggs does not appear to be afraid for her safety. She does not appear to be afraid of Ms. Brent. They're arguing back and forth. Ms. Griggs keeps asking her, demanding, why are you so upset? I don't understand why you're so angry. And Ms. Brent's response is, I'm not angry. I'm not upset. And then eventually the argument ends with Ms. Brent walking away. So in response to that, Ms. Griggs quits. And I think the cases from this court and the standard in the plain language of the statute makes clear that an average reasonable person would not choose to lose a steady paycheck over that situation. They might start looking for another job, but to quit and become unemployed, I don't think we quite get there.
So what weight are we to put on the ULJ's finding that Ms. Griggs did not go in bring the behavior issues to the attention of the board of directors? What weight are we to put on that? Because that seems like kind of an unreasonable burden to put on an employee to go to a board member. Go ahead.
I agree, Your Honor. And I think that is an extraneous finding that this court may disregard. Ultimately, the legal standard is whether the employee gave the employer enough notice and an opportunity to address any adverse working conditions. And this court's precedential cases, opinions make clear that if you complain to the manager or any manager, really, that's enough to put the employer on notice. The manager's knowledge is imputed to the employer. And in this case, there is evidence that Ms. Griggs complained to Ms. Bruns directly about the way that Ms. Bruns spoke to her. And we concede that that would have been sufficient. So the ULJ, to the extent that she relied on this failure to complain to the board, was in error. But in her final decision, I don't think she relied too much on that. I think she relied on just the fact that this conduct would not compel an average reasonable person to quit and become unemployed. And I see I have 30 seconds left, Your Honor. So unless there are any further questions, I would just ask that you affirm the ULJ's final decision. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Morgus, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. May it please the court, Nicole Morgos representing appellant Rachel Griggs. Counsel noted that the lunch practice was consistent through the 8 years that Ms. Griggs worked there. Yes, it was consistently violating the law that we talked about. So the ULJ did not amend the initial decision to correct the law, as the law was not corrected.
Although arguably the law was corrected with respect to what ended up being the determinative decision of the ULJ, because I note the difference between the initial findings and the affirmation order. The ULJ did delete the reference to your client not appropriately reporting the challenged conduct. That analysis that if you're complaining about the supervisor to the supervisor, that's not enough. So maybe that's the legal correction that the ULJ made.
Well, but still the ULJ was incorrect in noting that Ms. Griggs didn't complain or, you know, report the information to the board, which I know counsel has, you know, said that and I agree that you have to complain to the supervisor, which Ms. Griggs had done. There was discussion about that there was no threat to Ms. Griggs' safety. Nothing was thrown at her. There's no requirement that there, you know, that she have to be her safety have to be threatened. Again, you know, we're looking at an objective standard, and what does she have to endure? I mean, the judge found credible that there was yelling, that there was throwing. There's no requirement that things have to be thrown at her for her to have good reason caused by the employer to quit her employment. Well, and
can I just ask you, because I'm looking at the two orders, and And one finding, I mean, the one finding that is consistent is that she quit because of a personality conflict with the supervisor, and because she was scolded for ordering lunch from an outside source. That's almost the identical finding in both orders. And it would it be a fair statement to say that the judge looked at that and said, well, that's, you know, I didn't analyze this correctly because that's an important finding. And that's why this lunch thing is just a red herring about, you know, whether she, you know, had enough time for lunch or not, because that was never an issue in the case. So she analyzed the case differently. And that's why she didn't utilize the additional materials that came in, because she said that doesn't change that finding. Why would that analysis be wrong?
I would say that the meal break issue is not a red herring. So the hearing is not an adversary proceeding. It's an the ULJ has to gather evidence. That's what the ULJ has to do during this hearing. And during the first hearing, the ULJ asked questions about whether, you know, she got a break or not, and went into those questions, obviously realizing that that issue was important, as in most unemployment cases, both of the sides are unrepresented. The ULJ is required to assist in the presentation of evidence. So the ULJ will ask questions that are relevant to the issues. And even if Ms. Gragas did not come out and say that she quit because of that reason, it's related to the reason that she quit. If she had been given the meal break, then there wouldn't have to be an argument about, oh, you're bringing in food too much and I don't want you to do it anymore.
But where in the record is there any testimony from your client saying it's because she wasn't given an uninterrupted meal break? I see complaining about, you know, her behavior, about not allowing her to bring food in from the outside, but where in the record does she ever say it's because I was not given a meal break separate from the children, or what, or something akin to that?
So she, I think I had mentioned this earlier, but she did testify that the issue about having a break was brought up to the director by her and by her coworkers on multiple occasions, but that nothing had been done about it. So Ms. Gragas did testify, you know, essentially she could go run to the bathroom real fast, but that's really the only sort of break that she was given during an entire day where she had to watch, you know, a lot of kids all day. So even if it wasn't directly said, nor was it asked by the ULJ, who's required to help in the presentation of evidence, she did testify to the fact that, no, we've asked about this issue before and it's not been resolved. And the ULJ found that issues had not been corrected. And I see I'm out of time.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.